Andrea Arnold's second feature, Fish Tank, won the jury prize at the 2009 Cannes Film Festival. It's a coming-of-age story of a complicated teenage girl from a high-rise London housing project. It opens today in New York and is available on demand from IFC Films. Film critic David Edelstein has a review.
From the start, I knew the British director Andrea Arnold had captured something volatile and splendid in her second feature, Fish Tank. A girl named Katie Jarvis plays London East End 15-year-old Mia, who in the first shots stares out the window of a high-rise working-class project from a vacant flat where she practices hip-hop with tiny speakers. Mia has been phoning her best friend after a bad fight, and she heads out angrily and finds and confronts the girl in a yard, practicing hip-hop with other girls. And one calls her skanky, and Mia instantly, like lightning, headbutts her and breaks her nose. As she stomps away, you can feel her insides churn, and Arnold's handheld camera is both on her and with her. Rage, shame, defiance, longing. There's emotion in the camera's every jitter and swerve. Jarvis is in nearly every shot of Fish Tank. She has soft eyes, but her Mia is angry and defensive and has a dirty mouth. She has a feral quality that keeps you watching her closely for fear of missing something. Mia's dancing helps to channel her feelings, but despite big dreams, she's no Billy Elliot, and her accent and snaggly English teeth remind you where she comes from. It's her energy, her attack, that convinces you she won't go down without a fight. In interviews, Arnold said she wanted to cast a non-actress, and Jarvis was discovered on a train platform having a fight with her boyfriend and didn't believe the casting agent who approached her was for real. Arnold's acclaimed first feature, Red Road, centered on another outsider, a woman who monitored security cameras and spied and then spied on a man from her past. The film was formally brilliant, nearly wordless in its first half, but it didn't have the abrasive power of Fish Tank. Mia is constantly under siege by her mean and narcissistic mother, played by Kirsten Waring, and even by her nasty kid sister. So when she meets her mom's very handsome new boyfriend, Connor, his attentiveness throws her. Connor is played by the terrific chameleon Irish actor Michael Fassbender, who shows up at breakfast without his shirt while Mia is watching and imitating a hip-hop video.
Don't mind me, girl. Carry on. I was enjoying it.
As if.
Making eggs?
No.
It's the waterfall then.
I'm making tea.
Okay. I'm a friend of your mother's. You dance like a black. It's a compliment.
And what would you know?
I watch videos, like everyone else.
And that makes you some kind of expert, does it?
You've got a mouth, haven't you?
That scene and others between Mia and Connor will conjure up so many different emotions in different viewers that a chart of one's responses would zigzag more than an electrocardiogram. The erotic charge is strong. And so is our sense that Connor has more in common with Mia than he does with her mother, who's older than he is and often drunk. So, too, is the sense that a relationship between Mia and Connor would be wrong and perilous. In its outline, if not its milieu, Fish Tank bears a resemblance to the English art house hit In Education. But it has what that overrated film doesn't, something fevered and amorphous that suggests its characters are unsure of their own motives and that they're swimming, as the title implies, in a world with few options. Near the end, Mia's overcome with rage, and on impulse, does something shocking, nearly unforgivable. The sequence goes right to the verge of tragedy, but the final scenes have a transcendent mixture of hope and sadness that lifts kitchen sink realism to the realm of dramatic poetry. In Fish Tank, nothing for Mia goes right, yet her fate never seems preordained. Her constant motion, whether dancing, hurling obscenities, or recklessly charging ahead, might be her salvation or her doom. But you don't know, even in the last frame. That's a sign of this movie's open and deeply humanist vision.
David Edelstein is film critic for New York Magazine. I'm a TV critic, and I've been astounded by the latest round of the late-night TV talk show wars. And no matter what happens today, tonight, or next week, there's no question that already the gloves are off in a way they've never been before, at least not in public. Tuesday on ABC's Jimmy Kimmel Live, that show's host sided with Conan O'Brien by doing his entire show impersonating Jay Leno. And last night on NBC's Jay Leno show, Leno had Kimmel on during his 10 at 10 segment, throwing 10 questions at Kimmel, who was seen on a giant TV screen in a satellite interview connecting Burbank with Hollywood. Leno's second question threw down the gauntlet.
All right, question two. Besides doing a cruel impression of me, what is the worst idea your writers have ever pitched you?
Well, that was my idea, to be honest, but pitch a lot of bad ideas.
That set the tone, and the tone was vicious, in both directions. When Leno asked Kimmel who in the world he would most like to interview, this was Kimmel's response.
You and Conan, together.
Oh, okay.
I would like to have the two of you. I'd like just you. In fact, I'd like to do 12 at 12 with you tomorrow night,
really?
If you would be willing to do that, because I have a lot of questions to ask you about this whole thing. I don't think people care about what I have to say.
I agree with that.
What's going on in your life.
Tomorrow night? Tomorrow night's bad for me. All right, let's move on.
From that point on, both Leno and Kimmel knew that Leno was boxed in, forced to ask the rest of his prepared questions. And Kimmel just swung at them like softballs, and swung for the fences. Best prank Kimmel ever pulled?
Number five, you're known for pranks. What's the best prank you ever pulled?
Well, when my Aunt Chippy was at work, I painted her house orange and green once, and she was not happy.
Really?
The whole outside of the house was orange. Yeah. But I think the best prank I ever pulled was I told a guy that 5 years from now, I'm going to give you my show. And then when the 5 years came, I gave it to him, and then I took it back almost instantly.
Wow.
It was hilarious.
Wow, that's fine.
He still won't speak to me.
Very good friend. Very good friend.
I think he works at Fox or something now.
Yeah, I got you. All right, number six. Ever order anything off the TV?
Like NBC ordered your show off the TV?
No. Actually, something like that,
Leno took a real risk, though, when asking question number nine.
Number nine, is there anything you haven't hosted that you want to host?
Oh, this is a trick, right?
Where
you get me to host The Tonight Show and then take it back from
me? No.
I'm not going to... Listen, listen, Lucy, I'm not Charlie Brown. I don't fall for that trick.
And even when the 10 questions were up, Kimmel squeezed off one final shot. And it was a bullseye. Oh,
really? Listen, Jay, Conan and I have children.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All you have to take care of is cars.
That's right.
I mean, we have lives to lead here. You've got $800 million. For God's sakes, leave our shows alone.
A plea from Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy, thank you very much, my friend. See you tonight. Jimmy Kimmel Live.
Yikes. No wonder the country is fascinated by this very public battle. It's got everybody talking. It's got the participants rolling out their A material. And it's even got me watching the Jay Leno show and laughing.